Welcome to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood with your host, Angela Jones. Presented by Brighter Day Law, listen to the stories of the people who make Colorado Springs a great place to live and make our world better every day. We want to give back to those who give so much to us.
Good morning. It's another brighter day in the neighborhood with your host, Angela Jones. Our program is sponsored by Brighter Day Law. And today we have a Brighter Day employee spotlight. We have our very own Michelle Biggie O'Connor. She likes to go by Fancy. And I'll let her tell you why. I don't know why. But thank you so much for joining us here, Michelle, as if you have any real choice, being that you're here helping me with this every week.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I know. We were just talking about, before you sat down, about how you were nervous. I mean, you sit through these interviews every time.
Yeah.
And so, but I think it's a little bit different getting your turn.
Yeah. I oversee I guess I work in conjunction with Al, our producer, to oversee the radio show. But it's a lot different when you're on this side of the mic. So normally I'm sitting behind you. So, but this is interesting. Yeah.
So just for our listeners, would you just tell them a little bit about, like, you know, who you are and what you do at Brighter Day Law?
So my name is Michelle O'Connor, and I am Angela's executive personal assistant at Brighter Day Law. I've only been there for a few months now. I came in with the new wave of hirees, so that's pretty exciting to be at the beginning of that point of growth with the firm. I'm originally from Alabama. I was actually born in Florida, but moved to Alabama when I was a few years old, so I might as well say I'm from Alabama, you know. And I moved to Denver in late 2015. And I worked in Denver for a little over 4 years. And now I'm here in Colorado Springs, and I love it. It's great. Yeah.
Well, and we're certainly glad that you joined us. And talking about that new wave, back in April, we expanded the firm quite a bit, brought on a couple of attorneys and some legal support staff, as well as some admin staff. And you were our crown jewel among the new hires. And so far as me needing someone to, you know, help me day to day with all of we had going on, it was a new position that we created, and we're really happy to have had you with us. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, and I don't know about those of you who know Angela, she is always going. She is incredibly busy, so you can imagine doubling in capacity so quickly. Things are just crazy. She's never had an executive assistant. So we've definitely had some growing pains, but also a lot of growth, I feel like. So it's good. It's interesting.
I think what's also really interesting is sort of the work that you've done coming up to, and then, because this is a new, kind of a new thing for you. So how about we talk about a little bit about your background in terms of, you know, well, definitely your history, but your professional background and, you know, how you got into that.
Okay. I guess I'll start way back. My parents, we had a guest on not too long ago. Again, I was sitting in on all these radio interviews, who talked about how her parents were hippies. Well, so were mine. Big time hippies. And so, like, my dad now has a ponytail, and it's longer than my hair. He picked me up from the airport one day when I was flying back from Denver, and I thought, oh my gosh, my dad has a ponytail.
Like, I know Willie Nelson wears the pigtails, but like,
oh,
that
no, not
kinda
like yes, like long, like, okay. Oh man, it's something, but he loves it. But yeah, so my parents always raised my younger brother and I to kind of think outside the box, just because they were a bit different than, I guess, I hate to say stereotypical Alabamian, but then most people around us. We were raised kind of like wild, you know, hellions almost, banshees, I guess you could say. Like, we walked around, you know, barefoot all the time. I'm sure you did too growing up. Did you?
Well, yeah, I'm from Northeast Florida. So.
Yeah, we're basically neighbors.
Well, and when you're going typical Alabamians, I had to restrain myself. So we have this whole, you know, football rivalry thing going on.
Roll Tide.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. And so we're talking about typical Alabamians. That's just so loaded. But for the sake of this program, we'll just move on from
yeah,
there.
Okay, we'll let that go, yeah. And I actually went to Auburn, which is odd. But no, my my parents told my brother and I, they always kind of raised us to think for ourselves. And number one, like our number one, you know, goal in life is to treat people kindly, you know, and treat everyone equally. Right. And, you know, no matter race, religion, you know, anything of that sort. And so Alabama, it wasn't, it was just a little bit different, I guess, growing up. I think my brother and I always kind of felt like we didn't really find our niche, so
like
to speak.
You didn't fit.
Yeah, yeah, so to speak. But so I worked throughout college and grad school at a restaurant, and I waited on a group of men. We called them the men's group. They came in every Friday. Wonderful men, like the former athletic director for Auburn, David Housel, former mayors, veterinarians, like really big local leaders. And I waited on them for 7 years every Friday, you know, and they would bring in like special guests. And one day they had this man named McDowell Lee come in, and he was the secretary of the Alabama Senate at the time and had always been really involved, like heavily in politics. That's another thing about our upbringing. We all, every night we would talk about the news. And my parents always told us that, you know, whether we decided, you know, if we were liberal, conservative, what have you, it didn't matter as long as we were kind to other people. You know, that was the only restriction they had. But so I was always kind of inclined to politics. And I met Mr. Lee, and he told me when I finished grad school to give him a call. And I did. And so I got hired at the Alabama Senate. I guess I was 25 when I started there. I worked there for 7 years for a state senator. He represented the capital city. So that was exciting. But it was also during a time of a lot of political upheaval. And I don't know, it's just sometimes it starts to wear on you, you know, dealing with constituents who are, some people can just be just downright awful, you know, and then you have the other end and you have wonderful, wonderful people. Right. But it got to be a lot. And I had a friend in Denver and she said, you should move out here. So I left my state job just like a maniac. And I'd never even been to the state of Colorado.
So you just moved out here, period.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. My little brother drove a U-Haul. I drove my car. Neither of us had ever been to Colorado. So we get
Had you ever been like west of the Mississippi?
Oh, I've been to California. My dad's family's from California.
Okay.
But
I'm just going to tell you, when we moved out here, when we came out here for the first time, I had never been west of the Mississippi.
Oh, I thought that was like.
I mean, I had flown to like California and went down to Tijuana with my aunt at the time, but you know what I mean? She was in San Diego and then I went to Mexico, you know, with her. But I mean, not really. You know what I mean? Not really.
No, we went to California quite a bit growing up. And it's funny because now my dad will call me a Yankee. And I'm like, dang. He's like, you're west of the Mason-Dixon.
That's like, well, you know, it's like when I go home, like, you know, because we're going to Nashville, the whole, you know, firm is taking an annual trip to Nashville. Yeah. And when I go to Nashville, or especially when I go to Northeast Florida, everybody tells me I don't have an accent.
Isn't it crazy? I know. And people out here are like, everywhere you go, where are you from?
Texas?
Are you from Texas? Oh, my gosh. That drives me crazy.
And I'm like, no.
Fortunately not.
That next to, hey, well, we lived in Germany for a while. They'll say, oh, do you speak German? And I'm like, honey, I barely speak English. So. Yeah. Anyway, but back to like, so you just took off on this big adventure.
I did. Okay. I did. My brother and I drove out here and we got to Denver and we obviously went through Kansas, Oklahoma, Kansas. Whoa, that was a drive.
Everybody hates that drive in Kansas.
The best way to go is through Dallas.
Yes.
It definitely is.
Yeah, to come across the South. Like, you know,
and
across,
you cut through New Mexico, like the corner of it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But we finally got to my house in Denver. I moved in with a college girlfriend of mine. And we got out of the car, and my brother got out of the U-Haul, and he said, so are we on a mountain? I said, no, we're on a mountain. Did you see the mountains over there? He said, I thought it was like a gradual
just, like we're just going like to start New Mexico and just go.
Yeah, just, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Well, that's typical Alabamian right there, if I've ever heard it.
Yeah, I swear. Miss Tennessee over here, y'all.
I know, right? Miss Tennessee.
Oh, goodness. But no, so I got to Denver, and I got a job with the Statewide Trade Association heading up their legislative affairs. So I did that for 4 years. And then, unfortunately, due to COVID, because we were my primary role was arranging meetings with legislators. We called them grassroots meetings because it was very much a grassroots approach in that I would arrange meetings with legislators and some of our local member dealers of the association who are constituents of those legislators. And we would go ahead and kind of prep them on upcoming issues just to be proactive. So if they had any questions about legislation we were going to have coming up the next session, they could go ahead and ask then. And but the whole thing, I mean, it was all in person. And that's pretty much, I mean, that was 90% of my job. So so then I moved out here. And I love it. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to think about the Springs just because I like living in a city, you know, but but I like it. I like the lack of traffic. It is impossible to navigate. I don't think I'll ever be able to go without my phone. Yeah, it's awful. I don't ever know where I'm at.
Yeah, really?
Well, it's so spread out, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and I've been in the Springs for about 7 years. I will say of all the places that we lived, it took I feel like almost the longest to sort of figure out Colorado Springs, like figure out the area. And I don't know if it's because of the way that the city grew from it, the beginning, like, you know, just, hey, you know, hey, it was, you know, Colorado Springs proper and you had the Broadmoor and then, you know, just the way the city came up with the military bases and whatnot. But I think you'll figure it out. I think it has changed a lot in the 7 years that I've been here. It really has, I feel like, really come into its own as a second city, you know, next to Denver. And I had a similar experience with that in Nashville when I first came to Nashville back in around 96 or 99. I think I was first in Nashville in I was in Clarksville before I was in Nashville in 96. But when I really came back to live there in 99, I mean, I'm telling you, downtown rode up the sidewalks in Nashville.
That's crazy.
At 5 o'clock. You couldn't get nothing to eat.
Oh, shoot.
I'm not kidding with you. Yeah. That's, and then, you know, you if anybody's gone to Nashville anytime soon, it's, I mean, it's something else.
It's wild. I was working on the itinerary for Nashville and I was picking we're doing a pub crawl one night on Broadway, which is going to be awesome. But I was just looking at the bars to check and see who was playing. So I was trying to find something kind of eclectic, you know, like country here, folk here, and all this different stuff. But like one of the bars, I think, closes at 4
a.m.
Yeah.
The next day.
Yeah,
I know. Right. It probably would have closed at 4 p.m. when I was first working in Nashville. But I want to just check in to acknowledge you're listening to the Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. Our special guest this week is my executive personal assistant at Brighter Day Law, Michelle O'Connor. And I had said at the beginning that, you know, I put the air quotes around Biggie in the middle because, you know, I just think it's funny, but in that you really like to be, you'd like to be called Fancy. And I know that's a kind of, seriously, it's a Southern name. And I just think I think it's pretty. I think it's cute. And I just wonder, I never got the story from you on that.
I just love Fancy. And I've always asked my parents, like, why couldn't it be Fancy O'Connor?
Like, I mean, that's so that's a great thing.
Well, it's the Reba McEntire song.
Well, her last name wasn't O'Connor.
No, Reba McEntire.
No, Fancy, I know.
She didn't. I don't think she had a last name.
Mm-mm, Fancy and Reba song.
She didn't have the best profession either. But no. It's just a really, it's a good song. But she redid that song. It was originally done by a soul singer, blues singer. I want to say back in the 30s or 40s. I'll have to find the original rendition of it and send it to you. But yeah, I just love the song. And as far as Biggie, so I'll say this, Angela likes to pick on me because I'm not very tall.
No. She is a huge personality.
Yeah.
And also I have suspicion that there are ties to the quote-unquote Alabama mob. As if one of those exists.
Yeah, so I told her to start calling me Biggie. I think he called me like Small Cake or something one day.
We were
ziplining. You called me something like.
I don't remember. Oh, yeah, that's the day we were out ziplining. Everybody
and
was coming up with these.
And call me Biggie.
Yeah. I said I was calling you Biggie. Somebody else came up with something weird. And I'm like, no, we're calling her Biggie.
Yeah.
Michelle Biggie.
You know
Biggie,
what? Biggie showed up at your front door.
That's right. I mean, it's the little quiet ones.
Because we're unsuspecting.
I know, right? Like, who would have thought? Never. You're not going to send in the big burly guy, the one who's scary looking. No, you're just going to send in somebody you never even saw coming.
Exactly.
Well, taking a step back, I know you said, you were organized in this sort of bar crawl, but it's really was really more focused on the music, you know, mm-hmm. and I know, because of the amount of time we spend together that you are a huge music buff. I mean, you've got just taste running across the board.
Yeah, I do. Like I said, my parents, as far as them being hippies, they would take us to shows when I was a kid. Like, I've probably been to 50 Allman Brothers shows.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I still go to them now. Like, I love mm-hmm. Allman Brothers. Mm-hmm. So they always, again, taught us to just think for ourselves. My younger brother, I mean, you think I know music. Oh, my gosh. He does all kinds of stuff that's, like, not commercialized. He'll send me links to new bands. So it's kind of how I, you know, open up my scope. But, yeah, I love bluegrass, I love country, I love rap, I love classic rock, I love it all. I love old, like soul. It just depends on what kind of mood I'm in.
So, and how do you think that, like, where did that seed get planted? Did you always love music from the time you were, like, little?
I think so. And like I said, we were just, my parents always had music playing in the house mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. Like every day when we got home from school, there was music playing. Mm-hmm. Every weekend, you know, while we were cleaning the house or if we were swimming in the pool, they always had music and speakers mm-hmm. outside. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we were always just kind of pushed towards it. And I also think the fact that I'm like not musically inclined at all.
So you don't play any instruments?
No, I can't sing. I can't do anything.
You like, can't sing?
We aren't doing a Shelly here.
No, we're not doing a Shelly here because honestly, I can't sing much either.
You sounded nice that day.
Well, I used to actually sing. I actually sang solos in chorus in school and at church in the choir, you know, and all of that. But when I was around 25, and this was in Middle Tennessee, it's like a dust bowl for allergies there. And I got a really, really bad sinus infection. Most of the women on my side of the family have really pretty singing voices. But I got a really bad sinus infection and it affected my vocal cords.
Oh, that's awful.
And I was in school. I was a senior. I was a senior in college.
Okay.
And I think it was just kind of, you know, I got through that. But then I was in law school. And then I was, you know, I mean, just life. I never have went and put the work into, you know, retraining my voice. And, you know, now that's been 25 years ago.
That was a shame.
Yeah. And so it's just nothing. It's not something I ever did. You know, and I think it is something I could do. You know,
you knew anything. Hey, I know. You say it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Well, right? and we talk about that a lot. So if there's something like that, so is there anything that, you know, and I'm not saying I like regret it, but I think it's just sort of one of those things. Like I always wanted, you know, to play a musical instrument and, you know, also, but it was one of those I didn't learn when I was a kid and then, you know, life. And,
yeah.
But that, you know, is there something like that, that's sort of out there for you that you're like, God, I always thought like I'd want to do this and you still got the opportunity and you might like delve into it?
You know, I've talked for years. I've thought about it for longer than that, but mm-hmm. seriously talked for years about moving to Portugal.
Portugal?
Mm-hmm. Because okay. I am Portuguese.
Uh-huh.
But I don't speak any Portuguese.
Right.
So there's a barrier there. But they speak a lot of English in Portugal. That, hey, have you been recently?
I've been to Portugal. And I will tell you, it is not an easy country to navigate if you don't speak Portuguese. It's not insurmountable. I mean, we did not starve to death when we were there. But yeah. It's Portuguese, like, it's like...
it's not like Spanish.
It isn't. It's kind of, if you know Italian and you know Spanish, then you can navigate it a little more. But it is, for me, one of the more difficult Latin languages to just kind of navigate around. I was you know, in Florida and, you know, in the South, mm-hmm. you learn a certain amount of Spanish.
Right.
Especially you learn to understand it even if you can't mm-hmm. speak it. And so that served me well, like in, you know, obviously in Spain when we were stationed overseas. And then in Italy, I could more or less eke it out. I went to Portugal and it was, I mean, I don't know. I couldn't sort it out. Now, you could learn it, though.
Well, and I would like to do a Rosetta Stone, you uh-huh, know, get something uh-huh. like that before I went. My great-grandmother is actually born in Portugal. She immigrated over here. She's born in the Azores.
Uh-huh.
Have you been to the Azores?
No.
Mm-mm. It's beautiful. She's from Pico Island, the mm-hmm. Azores. But she lived to be 104, actually. And we used to go stay with her every summer in California.
Oh, wow.
And she spoke Portuguese fluently, obviously. And we never knew what she was talking about. So finally, one day, my younger brother and I were like, Mies, that's what we called her, Mies. Yeah. What are you saying? And she said, do you want to know some dirty words? So she told some cuss words. So I do know how to cuss in Portuguese. No,
that is the kind of grandma I think I want to be right there. Hey, my kids, their payback is coming.
Well, she's like, your parents won't know what you're saying. My dad doesn't speak it. Like,
that's funny. Yeah. So then was your dad like first generation?
See, my great-grandmother immigrated, so I guess that would make my dad second generation.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, and I'd be third. And also from his father's side, my great-grandfather immigrated from Ireland. Yeah, that hints O'Connor.
That's yeah, there's the O'Connor from. Part,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I always loved, because there were no Portuguese in Alabama. Right. And we identified so strongly with that. And, like, we eat a lot of, like, Portuguese dishes and stuff, or we did growing up. So when we would go to California for the summers, it was so awesome because all of the Portuguese immigrated to this small little area called Tulare.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, outside of Fresno. But they were all goat farmers.
Mm-hmm.
When they immigrated.
Right.
And so there's still just a ton of Portuguese people there. And I have like second cousins and third cousins. And it was always like literally the entire time I lived in Alabama, I met two Portuguese people. And I would go to California and it was like everyone was Portuguese. You know?
Everyone.
It was
right?
So cool. Yeah.
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 So what are your favorite Portuguese dishes?
Well, my mom used to do, and I don't even know what it's called, but it was like a special Christmas breakfast.
Okay.
And it consisted of like rice and beans and linguiça. Love linguiça.
What is linguiça?
It's a Portuguese sausage.
Okay. Okay.
It's actually, because you go to Hawaii pretty often, it's really common in Hawaii. They call it Portuguese sausage. That's what they call it. They don't call it linguiça.
Right.
But you can go to McDonald's and that can be the meat option.
It's absolutely.
Yeah. It's like a spicy sausage. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have to get that shipped from California because they didn't have it in Alabama.
Right.
But yeah, linguiça and then fried biscuits. My mom would make homemade biscuit dough and then pan fry them. I think that's just Southern, but
your mom wasn't Portuguese.
Mm-mm. She is well,
or was she?
No, but my grandmother always said that they were Native American because both my parents were pretty dark complexed. And my mom and I did the 23andMe, and not a drop of Native American.
Not a drop. Huh?
No, she's just a mixture of German and French and. Yeah, Irish. She's a lot of Irish.
You know, but my grandmother, my maternal grandmother was French, but she was darker. Like, she had dark hair and dark brown eyes. My mother has dark hair, dark brown eyes, but fair skin. And that part of my family migrated from Russia to France, like at the turn between the late 1800s, early 1900s, because of oppression of Jews. So they were Jewish Russians that moved to France, and that, you know, and then my grandmother's great grandfather had children, and then, you know, so on. And then there were marriages with Scandinavian. You know,
isn't it interesting how that happens?
I know, it's like we talk about the United States being sort of a melting pot.
It is, 100%. And things like that.
But so is Europe. And I mean, in many ways, you know, lots and lots of, places in the world end up kind of being that way. And I think it's really kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So
have you ever done one of those genetic tests?
I haven't done a. Mm-mm. I mean, I know, like, essentially my family is European, my history on both sides of my family. Back before they had those DNA and me, genealogy, just doing research, you know, genealogy research was just a hobby of my grandfather. And so on my mother's side, you know, they went back and, you know, were able, like, you've heard of Brandon, Florida. My mother's a Brandon.
Oh.
So they were famous. From, kind of. I think my grandmother was overly impressed with my grandfather, Robert Brandon, of Brandon, Florida. Like, he was landed gentry or something, and it turns out not so much. when they got back to the States after, well, and how they met was he went into Paris at the end of World War II, and he was part of the group that helped to liberate Paris,
and
my grandmother was living there. So that's sort of how she was our World War II bride. But when she came, you know, from living in Paris and living a relative, you know, high life, like what you're talking about, city girl, and he was stationed and he was enlisted in the Navy, stationed at Norfolk. It was a very different,
Different. Eye closing,
right? Well, and that's kind of interesting how that zigs and zags. So, well, for the time being, I mean, you know, I think that'd be really cool to realize that dream of living in Portugal and like live, work, and stuff like that. But, you know, for the time being, you've taken this sort of detour out of politics and to work in to build a law, you know, thus building a law firm, helping a law firm owner. So how's that transition?
It's there's definitely been a learning curve, but I like it. I mean, I feel like if there's not a learning curve, then you're not challenging yourself necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like there should always be a learning curve in life and anything that you do. But yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it. The staff is wonderful. I mean, you've put together a wonderful staff. Everybody's just amazing and so loving. It very much is like a family. There are four of us that are there every day in the office. We have a big, it's an old Victorian downtown, but we call ourselves the Core Four. And I'm like, a heart has four chambers.
Right, you know? Exactly.
But it is like that. We always have each other's backs. And to be able to have developed such close relationships in 3 months, I mean, it seems like so much longer, but literally I've only been here for 3 months now, you know, I guess 3 months and a week. But yeah, a lot of the like executive assistant stuff, like Angela's schedule and calendaring is intense. But like I said, there's never a dull moment. Okay. Yeah. Every single day is different. And like, I love doing this radio show. Initially I was kind of, I thought, oh my goodness, a bit overwhelmed by the idea of doing it. Now it's one of my favorite things to do each week.
Right.
So yeah, it's nice, you know, to be able to branch out and learn new things.
Right. And I think, at least from my observation, what I, you know, your sense of adventure, your, you know, willingness to kind of jump in and, you know, do new things. I mean, you've got a work ethic that doesn't stop, you know, you're, you know, always striving to do new things and you're showing up, you know, I mean, sometimes you'll be emailing me and it's really late or texting me and it's really late. And I'm like, girl, why are you working right now? And you're like, I got to get it done.
Yeah, like last night. I was working last night.
That's right. But yeah, we're just really glad that you've joined us and you really do make a wonderful addition to the team.
Well,
and
thank you. I'm really glad to be there.
Yeah, yeah. And we're really glad you took a shot. I'm super glad to have had this. You know, it's kind of one-on-one time to talk about,
It's been nice.
Something other than Alabama football with you.
Roll Tide, everybody.
So, well, thank you
for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us and another episode of the Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. We so enjoy you stopping in with us and look forward to having you join us each and every week for another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. It's been wonderful to spend this time with you, and we look forward to having you join us each and every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Until then, see y'all.
This has been A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood, presented by Brighter Day Law. Heard every Sunday at 11 a.m. on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 a.m., and 95.7 FM. Listen to the companion podcast on Podbean. Brighter Day Law are an experienced and qualified team of divorce and family law attorneys. Their aim is to help you get through that emotional and challenging time of divorce and other family disputes. The mission of Brighter Day Law is to compassionately help families resolve their disputes with personalized legal representation while keeping the best interest of the entire family at heart. Their attorneys handle all kinds of family law cases, including child custody, divorce, high asset divorce, mediation, and alimony. Brighter Day Law, compassionate counsel in dark and stressful times. 225-4493 or at brighterdaylaw.com.